You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
Another one bit the dust. Kentucky bit the dust as Tennessee continues to win baseball series. Haven't lost one since opening weekend against Alabama. This was the biggest one so far in terms of a national perception, and gotta say I was a little frustrated on Friday night as Tennessee blew that game one. But they bounced back on Saturday in big fashion with a statement first inning, able to get enough out of Drew Beam to get that win. And then in game three yesterday, yeah, like it felt, Sam, I don't know how you felt watching it, but it felt to me like it was the game I've been waiting for Tennessee, and not necessarily the pitching you were waiting for, right? But to me, I wanted to see how the team would respond when sometimes things weren't going well, especially on the road.
Sure.
Through the first, you know, four innings, I thought the offense was pretty dead outside of the Christian Moore two-run home run after Stark had walked. That was pretty much the only offense. Everyone else, all the other at-bats, didn't go very well. And then, you know, Kentucky comes out, gets a lead, adds another run the next inning, and it's 6-2, and you're like, okay, now what are you going to do? There's still enough time to get the offense going. What are you going to do? And they responded immediately in the top of the sixth, and then, you know, ended up scoring, what was it? I guess 11 runs in the final five innings of the game?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's exactly where I looked at in that game, too. I think, you know, there haven't been maybe like a ton of opportunities so far for this year to really respond in that situation because, you know, you've been kind of winning most of those games, and you just kind of haven't had a time where you've gone down big, I would say, kind of late into the game, and especially one of these SEC opponents and on the road, like you said. So I think that response was great, and you got the response from, you know, from those leaders of your team and those guys that are kind of those spark plugs that, you know, just kind of get the boys going in the dugout and get that energy going high. And I mean, I just think that those guys drive the winning on this team, and you can really tell about it when Vitello talks about these guys and everything. But I just think this was a very important win, especially for the back half of the season and just kind of being able to try to chase them in the SEC standings.
Yeah, got to give a shout out to Tony V. My bad for the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Thinking it was dumb that Blake Burke was batting second. My bad. The transformation of Blake Burke should be used in every recruiting pitch, both for high schoolers and transfer portal guys from now until the end of time, because what Blake Burke has done from last year to this year, it needs explanation. I don't understand how he's gotten so much better. How he's raised his batting average, you know, 130 points from a junior year to a senior year. That's crazy to me. And Tennessee's top of the lineup, Christian Moore and Blake Burke. I mean, has Tennessee had a better 1-2 punch? Or not even 1-2 punch, just better two guys in a lineup?
Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, those are two just monsters.
And then you got Billy Amick right after that.
Yeah, I mean, and it was nice to see Tears back batting this weekend and coming through big in some moments. You know, Dylan Dreiling is going to give you a good at-bat. Like, Tennessee's top five guys in the lineup, I can't imagine there's anybody better in the entire country. And Moore and Burke are playing at a level that, again, I don't think anybody at Tennessee has done, at least not since 2000. I mean, I won't speak on the team in the 90s. I was too young to really pay attention.
How would you rank that top five in the order versus the 22 team? I can't quite recall the specific order of that, but it's got to be neck and neck, if not better.
Overall, the lineup's numbers are better than 2022, and that's with having, you know, guys at the bottom of the lineup that haven't really been coming through for you. So I'm going to imagine statistically this year's team blows that top five out of the water, if I was just guessing, just because the bottom of the lineup hasn't given you anything and you still have better numbers overall.
Yeah, I would say that this team is probably better. It's just, this team is so balanced to me. You've just got, you know, you've just got such a great look at everything. You know, you've got such great balance with your righties and lefties. I just think you've got guys that are drawing out good ABs and some guys that are just immediate power threats. And, yeah, I just think that this team is really, this lineup is almost just meshing together perfectly right now at the right time.
They exploded games two and game three. Game one was a pitching duel. Game one was, you know, your traditional maybe Major League Baseball game. And you had a couple of bad defensive moments that cost you that game on Friday, game one. But you bounced back, and you came up big, and Christian Moore had 8 hits in like 24 hours.
Insane.
Just like an absolute monster. They couldn't get him out. And they weren't just like singles. He was crushing the ball. 4 home runs in 24 hours of those 8 hits. Is that right?
Yeah. No doubters, too.
Yeah.
I mean, just crushing the ball.
Yeah, it was.
I was just sitting on my couch giggling at that last one. Yeah. As the Kentucky announcers were like, well, that's no good. I think they'd let out a oh no whenever he hit it, like oh no.
The sadness from those announcers made those home runs even better too. They're like, "Man, that's another from Christian Moore."
No, that last one was He's saying as the ball was leaving. I thought the vibe of the whole series. I got to watch at least a little bit of all the games. I watched most of them on Saturday and Sunday, but felt like it was kind of regional-ish. You know what I mean? It had some serious intensity, which that's impressive too, you know, that the boys rose up and just took care of business. I really felt outside of that, based on what I saw, outside of that seventh inning on Friday night, I don't want to make it sound like it was domination, but it felt like the team, for the most part, there was only an inning or two where I didn't feel like they were in charge of this thing. But Kentucky was good. They were definitely good.
Kentucky's a top 15 team.
Yeah.
They ran into a top 5 team.
They're definitely better than top 15. I think they're a top 10 team for sure.
I was impressed.
To me, it just didn't feel like they had very many arms at all, really.
Yeah, that's what I wondered. Like, their ERA is top 3 or 4 in the conference, and I'm kind of – I don't know if that's about who you played against or what, although the conference top to bottom is pretty tough.
So. Yeah, but they've definitely had one of, if not the easiest schedule so far in the SEC prior to this weekend. Like, I don't know. Like, top 15 to me is solid. Like, I mean, I think that's a team that's going to host a regional. I don't think they're going to host a super regional. Sure, Sam, if you're saying they're 10 versus 13, I mean, we're not really saying anything too different. Yeah. But to me, Tennessee was just in a different weight class is how I felt. I didn't watch that Kentucky team and think they had a lot of the elite top-end talent. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe I'm not got the trained college baseball eye. But I came in like not even thinking or knowing if they were top 15. So I thought if you're Kentucky, at least you showed like, hey, we're – if we do a couple different things, we could beat anybody. I'm not saying you could go to that sad if you're Kentucky. Like Bob said, it felt like a regional. If you're Kentucky, I think coming out of the weekend, your realistic goal now is to make a super regional. I think that's their goal. Tennessee's goal is make Omaha. I think that's just the difference right now between those two teams. Credit to that catcher, though. I mean, to go out there with his hamstring and – it seemed like he was gutting it out, and he was coming up big.
I think he's kind of one of their spark plug guys.
Well, I just kept talking about how he was a team leader and everything and how, you know, there's no chance he was sitting out. So, like, credit to him. I mean, to play while you're hurt's one thing, but to catch while you're hurt. Like,
hamstring.
Yeah. Yeah, like your hamstring. I imagine every time he sat down or crouched down, got in position, he was in a lot of pain. So I will give him some credit there. It was set up for him to have his Kirk Gibson moment, too, in terms of – at least tying the game, you know, he made the last out. The tying run at the plate, he was the tying run. Our boy Kirby, Tony kind of just – we joked about that with Kirby last time we talked to him, about knowing how long he's going to have whenever he goes into the game. He's like, I just kind of pitch and just wait to see when Tony comes and gets me. And I imagine a couple of times, especially the night, he's like, hey, can you come get me? Because they are just drilling the ball off of me, and I'm sitting there just kind of laughing. Because Tony's just like, yep, sink or swim. We need a couple more outs. And, you know, Two outs. Curry let the tying run come to the plate. So then Tony pulled the plug and gave his first look to Phillips. And I thought Phillips answered the bellman. That to me was the pitching story of the weekend. Maybe was or maybe one of I guess maybe the second story, but because Combs was awesome.
He was.
That's a guy that had struggled earlier this year that now is a legitimate arm out of the bullpen. So maybe he's story number one. But story number two for me was like, hey, Phillips coming out of the pen, throwing 97 and throwing strikes in a big moment. That's something maybe you could build on and find a new arm for the stretch run. Sam, agree or disagree?
Completely agree. Yeah, I was listening to, you know, Tony a little bit pregame, and he, you know, he even mentioned Marcus Phillips as kind of being a guy that they're willing to be able to throw out there in those situations. So I think him coming in there in a high pressure, high leverage situation is huge for his confidence and also just kind of this coaching staff's confidence and having other guys in this bullpen that they, you know, they feel comfortable in and turning to in those big situations. And, you know, like you said, John, I think you kind of the story this weekend, like I think the production that you got from your bullpen and guys that you haven't exactly gotten it from so far this season is kind of the story for me. Like, I don't think you got your, you know, you didn't get your best weekend from Nate Snead. And, you know, that's kind of been the normal guy that you can go to for 3 to 4 innings to kind of patch things together in between that starter and those closers. And I thought they did a great job of kind of navigating around that when he didn't have his best stuff.
Did you hear those announcers? It was the announcers were not good, in my opinion, overall. However, they made a couple good observations. And from time to time, I also felt they were pretty reverential to Tennessee, too. They loved Blake Burke's play yesterday when he threw the guy out at third on the sacrifice bunt. I mean, that was a hell of a defensive play. But also when Phillips was out there to close out the game, there was kind of a pause. I don't know what it was, foul ball or whatever. And they were like, well, when you got a guy who comes from out of nowhere, from Iowa, you know, Tony Vitello's doing something right. I mean, Phillips is, that's the first time I saw him on TV. He's big, man.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
Big boy.
You know, he got the midweek start for the first time last week, and, you know, now gets to come in and close out a series win against a top five team on the road. Like, I'd imagine his confidence has reached a level where it needs to. I thought Tony's quote after the game was pretty telling about him, where he talked about Marcus Phillips being an exclamation point, he called him. He says he reminds me of Garrett Crochet. I'm not comparing the two, but the last guy in our facility to know that Garrett Crochet was good was Garrett Crochet. It's usually the opposite with kids, Tony said. And Marcus, I think, knows he's good and thinks he's good, but he's going to be the last one to realize how good he truly is and can be. And that quote got me fired up talking about that. Not comparing him to Crochet, but just saying, hey, like, this guy needs some confidence is essentially what Tony's saying. Like, the team you saw kind of rally around him and really, you know, celebrate with him on the mound, that wasn't just like celebrating a team win. That was celebrating like a moment for a player. You know, you had that a couple times. You had tears on Peebles, a sack fly, you know, sprint up to him and dap him up like, hey, man, way to come through, way to get it done, because, you know, he'd been struggling. And Tony gave him an opportunity to give us the go-ahead run with the bases loaded and no outs. You know, it would have taken a real mess up to not get that go-ahead run in. But instead, Peebles gives a ball, a ride to the warning track, you know, maybe aided by the wind a little bit, but came through with the sack fly regardless, and tears ran up to him and was like, hey, man, great job, great job.
Yeah,
like, that was a good moment. And then afterwards, you had the whole team kind of doing that to Phillips. You know, they talked about Blake Burke stopping him before he got to the mound and giving him a pep talk. Like, so I think confidence-wise, the team probably knows, like, hey, this guy needs a couple moments. This guy needs to, like Tony said, figure out how good he is. So for him to come in there and work flawlessly for his one batter, I think hopefully pays big dividends down the stretch for him.
Yeah, we back to Kirby for a second, too. Really significant thing. He came in and, you know, Kentucky was felt like they were on the verge of rolling there, and he got them to ground into that inning double play, which it's just the little things like that. And, Yeah, I was with you, John. I was kind of wondering, okay, how long are we going to ride with Kirby? Just because, again, those guys were hitting everybody. You know, it's like sometimes you just have to mix it up. But Kirby gets another win, and, you know, he was a workhorse. I do think some of the pitching stories, that was like the first time I'd seen extensive action of Combs myself. And, man, he was filthy on Saturday for sure.
Yeah, I give Kirby credit for being a workhorse for the double play, because that did keep you in the game, and then you immediately came out and scored five runs in the next half inning. Tears with a great catch on a hard hit line drive before that, you know, to keep it. At first off the bat, it looked like it was a home run. It was about to be 7-2.
Yeah.
Then it looks like it's going to be a gapper and score a couple, but he's able to just cut it off and catch the ball, and the announcers are just kind of dumbfounded by that. The announcers cracked me up. You know, knowing that we won the series, it's easier to swallow, but, like, they just seemed like a couple of good old boys that wanted their team to win. It was the Kentucky announcers. It always kind of is the home team on SEC Network Plus. So, like, yes, they were biased, but I thought they were pretty funny in, like, a aw shucks way, not like a actual, like, hey, these are funny people. It's just, like, they are probably in above their head a little bit.
There was one play where they were like, Hunter Inslee makes a great play in center field, and the other guy was like, I think that was Kavar's tears. And he was like, you know what? I think you're right.
Yeah, that's a big miss.
He's like, I don't think Kavar's tears is – I don't think Hunter Inslee is black. This guy is black. How do we make this mistake? And they struggled the last couple innings with everything. Like, I thought they ran out of gas, kind of like Kentucky's bullpen did. Like, I thought they ran out of gas because they were, like you said, calling – player's the wrong name. It seemed like every time Kentucky hit a ball in the air, they thought it was a home run.
And what about, was it Tears' home run that they were like, that looks like it's going to be fair? And then they were like,
oh, it's out.
Oh, it's out.
Yeah. the go ahead 2-run bomb after one of the best at bats you'll ever see from Kavar's Tears. Like, I mean, he battled back from an 0-2 count, kept fouling pitches off, and then, yeah, crushes one. And yeah, when you watch the replay and you watch the call, it's like, yeah, that ball's going to stay fair, I think. Oh, wait, it is in the bullpen. Never mind.
Well, that one, the play-by-play guy needed to own it, because Doug Flynn was actually, I thought, given some decent analysis there. Like, he was saying, I don't understand why this pitcher's throwing the same – he keeps throwing the same pitch. Mm-hmm. And so when he hits the home run, Flynn was able to say, I told you, man, you know, you can't keep doing that. And was like, okay, decent analysis. But, yeah, the play-by-play guy was like, because I'm watching, I couldn't tell if it was out, you know, watching on TV, and the way they didn't help it, you know, they were kind of like, it's that could be fair. Oh yeah, it's out. That's a home run. Oh God, it was the other thing too. This is really minor, but I kept hearing it because they were whatever their mix was of audio, like field sound. I heard really overly loud the the walk up music. And they kept playing, dating myself, but it was Dokken. It was like this song called Mama from Dokken. It was like a rock song. And it's like not all the players have that walk-up music. There's no way. They just kept playing that. That part of it was weird in general. You know, the whole vibe in their dugout with those guys doing synchronized, you know, cheering and all that stuff. It was... Part of it was strange. Part of it, though, was I thought it was a great series. I really enjoyed the hell out of watching it.
Yeah, we could say that knowing we won it.
Exactly.
If we lost the series, we would come in saying, oh, man, the team was really annoying. Those announcers sucked. The camera people, they messed up countless times in big moments.
Probably students. No, nothing against students, Sam, but, you know, I mean.
You shouldn't be running the TV broadcast of a top five.
Yeah.
Of a top five weekend series.
Yeah, that's a bigger deal. It's like whoever was doing programming for SEC Network, it's like you didn't think about flip-flopping these or putting – I guess that it was already too far gone in terms of crewing and everything else.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what the lead time you need and how far away you plan that. I mean, no one saw Kentucky baseball being this good, but
yeah,
chances were like you should have known Tennessee baseball was going to be pretty good. I don't know what they showed on SEC Network or ESPNU. I don't know. I know there was another top five matchup there, but it seems like, yeah, you should have maybe bumped that up and moved some things around, because Kentucky has been a top 15 team the last, you know, couple weeks for sure.
Have you guys heard anything about, and I know there's been a lot of chatter about it. Maybe we can ask when Shumpert comes on later in the show too about A.J. Russell, like his status.
the last updates I've seen is that, you know, they're still waiting on him to come back. They still think he's coming back,
yeah,
but they're going to be cautious with him.
I would guess it's in one of the last series of the year, yeah. Second to last one, maybe last one. Hope that you can have him back for the regional and stuff like that. I just think they're definitely not pushing him.
Yeah.
At this point, it definitely seems, Sam, like he'll be a bullpen guy when he's back, yeah. Right? I don't see them throwing him back out there as a starter at this point.
No, I don't either. And I honestly think that might be an advantage, too. Like, I think, you know, like I was kind of talking about Snead not having his best weekend in terms of being kind of that long reliever guy. I think A.J. Russell obviously having the experience of last season to kind of be able to do that. I think, you know, and some of these guys stepping up, you've got Stamos and Causey, you know, I feel like you can be confident in one of those guys on a Friday. So a guy like Russell being able to step out of the pen and, you know, give you up to five or six innings at a time, I think is only good things for this team.
Well, you also know that when tournament time comes around, your rotation kind of gets thrown out of whack anyways.
Yeah.
Like you're going to have to play.
Anyone's available.
Extra games, yeah, and like having extra arms with that they could give you five or six innings starting, I think is a big deal. So like Russell, you need him back. So if you can add Russell back to this rotation slash bullpen, and you could find something where Phillips is at least a guy of the bullpen that could come in and get you out of a jam, maybe. That would be two huge additions, and Tennessee needs a couple extra arms because the lineup's as good as ever. The lineup is national champion good. Hopefully they can come through with some timely hitting, and hopefully the arms can give you enough. Big series win, though. Any final baseball thoughts?
No, just got a Thursday-Saturday series coming up this week. I think the next 2 weeks in a row are Thursday-Saturdays.
That is correct, as Missouri comes to town, correct?
Yes, yeah. What, Western Carolina tomorrow night. So hopefully a beat goes on here this week.
All right, got a little basketball news we could get to. Stick with us. Back at the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Again, one more shout-out to White Claw and their vodka sodas. They help make Saturday run smoothly. Appreciate White Claw for their support. Please drink responsibly. All right, Bob, give me the scuttlebutt or the scoops. Tennessee basketball's roster still not set. We have passed my noon deadline that I set on Friday. So where are we at right now?
Well, I would say things are getting interesting. Yes, you had your noon deadline on Tobe. There's been no word at all on Tobe, although I would argue it seems that things may be getting clearer anyway. Because he's not even in Knoxville. Maybe back now, but as of last night, he was spotted, and I've seen the photograph, he was spotted at the Phoenix airport. Now, this might not mean anything, you know. My first inclination was, oh, okay, maybe he's out visiting University of Arizona and Tucson. I don't know. Maybe there's something else going on that's, you know, personal family business. Who knows? But here's the point. I felt that we talked about this on Thursday morning before Coach Barnes's presser, and we talked about, again, some of the things I had been hearing in the background, and that is maybe, you know, maybe we're not waiting on Toby, you know, and then Barnes confirmed that, and I thought said it kindly, but maybe Toby's, I'm starting to wonder if he really is not in the picture. And the reason I say that, that's just my opinion here, but it's after Barnes put that press conference statement out, which was, again, as kind as it could be, we love him, but he's got to make up his mind. Well, we're 72 hours later, and he's not even in Knoxville, and there's no word on any level of recommitment intention, nothing. And at the same time, yesterday, we saw news that Felix Okpara, who is a 6'11 rising junior, so has a couple years of eligibility, played at Ohio State. He entered the portal. And word is, from a lot of people around town, is that he's been on Tennessee's radar. Again, 6'11", more developed, physically than Jonas, for example. Just better put together, has a great motor. I talked to a friend of mine who knows ball and is tied to Ohio State, and he said he also lives here and is a Tennessee fan as well, and he was like, this guy could be better than Jonas. He only averaged about 7 points, 6 boards a game at Ohio State, but started 34 games, blocked 2.5 shots a game. Sounds like there's a lot of potential. Maybe the reason he's transferring out is the arrival of Aaron Bradshaw from Kentucky. So maybe there's not enough room at the five for a guy who started 34 games at Ohio State. But this guy is in the picture now, and it just makes you wonder, again, if he was already on the radar as a possibility of entering the portal, and given what Barnes said on Thursday about Tobe, I don't know. Could this be Tobe's really off the radar in general?
It seems as if Rick Barnes had the same deadline that I had, as we are now moving on, and that's how I feel. Now, we do have a little precedent, last year with Josiah, where, you know, like, it looked like he was gone for a long time in the offseason, then all of a sudden, you know, the spots fill up, you bring in Chris Ledlum from the Ivy League, and, you know, he looks like he's going to be a Josiah replacement. And then, you know, the NBA dreams get put on pause, and all of a sudden Josiah looks around and says, yeah, like, hey, I'm coming back. To the point where I remember people were like, well, there's not a scholarship. It's like, yeah, it's fine. He's going to get an NIL walk-on deal, and he'll be fine. They'll take care of his payment, his school there. And then, of course, Ledlum leaves. It takes care of itself, and Josiah's back at the starting lineup. But, like, it kind of happened last year with Josiah, where it looked like, you know, he was gone, the team's moving on, and then he found himself, you know, there and back in the starting lineup. So I'm not, you know, 100% closing the door on Awaka, but as far as I'm concerned, I have personally moved on. And the team now has to go out and find a center. And you got a name that makes a lot of sense with this Felix. Akpara?
I think that's it. Akpara, yes.
That's how it looks like it sounds. This Felix Akpara, who has ties to Tennessee, who played high school basketball in Chattanooga, and according to our friend Ryan Schumpert, you know, played high school basketball with Cam Carr and Julian Phillips at Link Academy. So, like, there's at least a relationship there with Cam Carr. There's a relationship with Tennessee, the state. There's an opening right now, a job posting. Need a big man, need a center.
Yeah.
One that, you know, likes playing defense would be nice. And it looks like this guy likes playing defense. He was second in the Big Ten in block shots. So, I think this one makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, this contact I mentioned who's got Ohio State ties said this would be a great get for UT, talking about Akpara. Has a better motor, way more upside, really better than Adu today, in my opinion. So I don't know if that's about toughness, if that's what he's talking about or what, because offensively he's got lesser numbers as far as points scored. But
yeah, I can't go that far, and I'm not going to act like I watched a lot of Big Ten basketball. I didn't. But to say he's better than Jonas – right now, man, that seems surprising. That seems like a reach. Now, saying that he could be as good as Jonas was next year and says he could do that, maybe. But, like, I don't see how he'd have that evidence that right now a guy that, what it seems like you pointed out, got recruited over at Ohio State with Bradshaw coming up there. I don't know we could say he's better than Jonas right now. It just seems like a bridge too far for me. Now, you know, the toughness, if you tell me he has a toughness and a motor, that's a positive.
Yeah.
If it's somebody that we can rely on to not shy away from big games and rely on to, you know, get physical and not get physically intimidated, like, that might be better for the makeup of this team.
Yeah.
That I'll be open to, and that I think a lot of fans will talk themselves into if Felix Akpara decides to come to Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know. We'll see. Again, no word back from Igor Milicic either. Maybe we'll hear something this week. It's weird. It feels like Tennessee's kind of on the edge on a lot of stuff here, and it could could be a whole bunch of new personnel at any time, or it could drag out. We heard Grant Ramey tell us last Friday that it could go on a little longer than maybe the fan base would like to know, but that's just the reality of it.
Sam, do you recall when Darling Stone made his commitment? Was it Monday? It was like Monday when we went off the air, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like, man, if you don't have a commitment from these kids when they're on campus within like 48 hours of them, you know, the visit happening, I feel like it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm giving Igor till noon before I'm moving on. You've had enough time, Igor. We're not holding a spot for you anymore, and I'm not holding a spot for you in my heart.
Send him an email.
No. The word will get back to him. Igor, if you hear this.
My people will find your people.
No. There's something about the Polish. There's just something about the Eastern Europeaners that scare me a little bit. I don't want no beef. No. My people are not going to find your people. I've seen Taken. I've seen enough movies and heard enough stories. I've seen the Jokic brothers. I know it's not all the same countries. I don't mean to disrespect you and your heritage, Igor, but I'm just saying, no personal beef. I'm just saying we're moving on from a business perspective. Although ranking the Eastern Europeans, Poland's probably the one I would feel the most comfortable scrapping with, I guess. No disrespect to Polish Joe, I guess, if he's listening. Don't come to a remote and try to prove anything to me, but I'm just saying, like, you know, the Czechs seem scary.
Yeah.
The Slovenians seem scary. The Polish, I'll take my chance.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Power ranking your scariest Eastern European countries.
Poland, I've had the good fortune to go into Poland. Nice people, really nice. It is a great country. I can't say enough good things about Poland.
This makes me think that they're scary, and Bob's just trying to get on the right side of
no, of
the beef. Talking about people, great country. I love it. Please.
Bob's
no, that was
some
my co-host.
Monster.
Yeah,
with a gun to his head.
I'm trying to debunk the stereotypes, because that's what I was a victim of going over. You know, all the old Polish jokes and everything. It was wonderful, really great place.
I have heard, like, if you go over to some of those that area, it's either like they're super super nice people, super hospitable, or it's just like, get out of here.
Yeah. Jonas Adu, according to Jeff Goodman, four schools that are heavily in the mix for him. You don't see Kentucky on this list. Baylor, North Carolina, Arkansas, and Alabama. Ugh.
Ugh. Alabama would kill me.
Yeah.
Kill me.
Is Alabama worse than Kentucky?
Honestly, maybe.
In this era, yes.
Really?
Well, just because Kentucky's got so much they got to build.
Sure.
Yeah. Alabama, you know, they're dialed in, made a Final Four. Oates is feeling good, got extended, still has a lot of talent.
Giving Alabama a big man, too, just hurts.
Yeah,
like, they had Grant Nelson, but he doesn't feel like a traditional big man, you know?
No, yeah, Jonas feels like he could be a really good rim protector while everyone else is kind of just out there scrambling around.
I mean, there was, all this chatter really accelerated. I guess it was on Friday about Jonas talking with Kentucky, and some of the stuff I'd heard was they're looking at – and they got one commitment over the weekend with Amari Williams, but they were looking at Amari Williams and this guy, his name's Great Osabor from Utah State, and those are their targets. It sounds like if there was contact made with Jonas, it's more like a backup option, you know, and maybe that's all it was, and maybe that's why Jonas, you know, isn't continuing on with them. And now they got Amari Williams, they might be getting their guys anyway.
Baylor seems to have promised Scott Drew, like, hey, stay here, don't go to Kentucky, and we will give you some NIL money to work with. We will make sure you have a commitment from some big-dollar boosters, and we'll make sure we're throwing some cash around. Jonas Adu has been linked to them, and then they land Roach from Duke. Yeah. Duke falls apart. That's strange. And that can't be something that college basketball in general likes, just because Duke is a needle mover. I want to say the most watched game of the year was Duke against
NC State. Yeah.
NC State, yeah.
Like, Elite Eight game.
That brand still matters, and they were kind of set to be, you know, the number one team in the country, or at least one of the top three or four teams in the country, and then just had their roster completely decimated as everyone left.
That's a whole baffling scenario to me. I mean, those freshmen, they have a great freshman class coming in. Well, they better be good, because I don't really see them adding anybody from the portal either. It's kind of...
I got one kid from Syracuse this weekend. I saw.
Did they?
Yeah. I can't remember his name, though.
The other thing we haven't talked about, I mean, it is, I think, pretty big news is for Tennessee is they do have a kid coming in for 25. They got a commitment from Dwayne Brown, 6'9", four-star kid out of, I think, Hoover, Alabama. So I saw somebody post a comment like, well, it feels like more of Tobe. And it's like, why? I don't know why you would say that. Just because he's 6'9", he's not 6'11 or 7 foot. I don't get that. He could still be an effective player.
Well, I also don't think that's an insult.
No, I know.
Well, yeah, but no, I mean, like, if you tell me it sounds more like Tobe, like, okay, like, I'm okay with that. Like, just because we're mad at him right now, like, Tobe was a good rotational player on an Elite Eight team. Like, if you tell me that Dwayne Brown's going to be as good as Tobe, I lock that in. I would be really surprised if, you know, this three-star big man is better than what we got over the last 2 years with Tobe Awaka. So, like, yeah, like, sign me up for that. If you told me that he would be that type of player, I'm taking that. That's a guy that could play, you know, some minutes for you in a top program.
Just sounds kind of like a Barnes recruit, right? Somebody who he can, you know, not a five-star, but somebody he can develop, and let's hope.
Yeah, you hope that when you look at his profile and you hope that he is someone that is willing to come to Tennessee and like you said, develop. And 247 has him as a three-star. I guess the composites have him as a four-star, so people are calling him a four-star.
Right.
And I guess you beat Alabama for him. Were there any other big schools, I guess, mixed?
I thought it was Mississippi State.
Alabama's, like, listed on the commitment list. I guess it came down to Tennessee and Mississippi State.
Tennessee were his final two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did Alabama want him? It said he had an offer, but I don't know.
Now they want Jonas now.
I guess they want Jonas now, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, like, you go into Alabama, you get the state's number one player. We'll see if he, you know, is a factor here in the upcoming years. But he does seem like a guy, like Bob said, that you come here and you try to develop and have him ready by his sophomore year.
All right, so noon today for Igor.
Yep, and that's me being kind, Igor.
Yeah,
really,
I've shut the door on him.
Honestly. Yeah, honestly, I was going to say my patience with you is wearing thin already. Like Sam said, once you get off campus, I'll give you a day. You know, if Darlin Stone, we gave him a day to go home, maybe, you know, work some leverage, try to squeeze out a couple more dollars, feel wanted, sleep on it, if you will. That way you don't feel like you're making a rash decision. Like, hey, I don't want to commit right now, coach. I'm going to go home and talk about my family and pray about it. And Rick's like, okay, that's fine. And then you get the announcement Monday. Like, that's fine. But, Igor, you were here on what? Like, you were here Monday to Wednesday? And it's Monday again?
Just be careful when you go start your car.
It's electric. I don't have to have this started. It's always on. It'll be fine. Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two with some stuff you missed from the weekend. Called about last night / about last weekend. Ryan Shumpert at 8:20. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. This segment is brought to you by SM Athletics. SM Athletics did a great job. The crew out there helping us with the Fan Run Open. Shout out to our champion, Tim. Shout out to my guy Trevor, who was helping with everything, helping with the gift bags, the swag bags, helping with drinks.
He had that enormous cooler riding around with him. I was like, man, watch those turns. I can speak from experience.
A real glue guy performance from my guy Trevor at SM Athletics. So shout out to him. If you need any merchandise, if you have any embroidery or prints, equipment, uniform needs, our friends at SM Athletics will take care of you, and they'll do it with a smile and top-notch customer service. Great products at a fair price. When they say it is done, it's done right and on time every time. Don't chance it with unreliable mega stores or online orders. Give SM Athletics a call today at 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Again, if you have any uniform equipment, screen print, or embroidery needs, You could trust SM Athletics. All right, Sam, how interested were you in the NBA playoffs this weekend?
I watched a good – like, I probably watched half of most games.
Okay.
I don't think I finished, like, many full games, though.
Okay.
But I caught a lot of it. I caught a lot of it.
Enough to watch. I'm like, okay, I'll turn it to hockey. I'm going to watch Scottie Scheffler. Yeah. Bob, what was your big takeaway from the opening weekend? Because I love the opening week off. When you get four games a day, just game after game after game, I love it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. It helped to also have Tennessee baseball going on at the same time. So I really enjoyed the sports weekend. Bob, what was your big takeaway? And was it just the Pacers laying an egg?
Well, I don't even want to talk about that. That was horrible.
Dame time.
Dame time. And that series now goes from a toss-up, in my opinion, to Bucks and five. The Pacers blew their opportunity without Giannis there. And there's talk he might be back for game three. So I just very disappointing. It just felt like the stage was too big for them. They looked a little scared to me, honestly.
That's what y'all brought me here for, said Dame Lillard as he scored 35 first half points right on the very overrated Tyrese Halliburton's head. Just
yeah, a lot on Nembhard too. He was then they started yapping at each other and.
You can't say much when somebody's dropping 35. Like
I know.
And
that's
half.
What I'm saying. It's like, walk away.
Take the L.
God,
take it
walk
on the
away.
Team.
No, for me, the biggest takeaway was we've talked about him before. I think we're all fans here. Anthony Edwards. Dude, special, man. He's
so
sick. Oh, my God. And I loved talk about yapping. I mean, it seemed like he was. It was kind of a healthy back and forth, I think, with him and Durant. You know, you saw the video maybe of him pounding his chest after lighting up a three with Durant in the vicinity saying, you know, it's me. And Durant, they cut away at him smiling just because Edwards has said all along, Durant's like his idol. You know, growing up, that was like his favorite player. So just when I thought Phoenix might come in and take Minnesota out of that series, and it's still a 7-game series, I get it, but boy, that was a statement by Minnesota and namely by Edwards.
No, Edwards, my big takeaway is like the young stars kind of, I know that's not Edwards' first taste in the playoffs, but I think it's his first taste in the playoffs as the unquestioned best player on the team. I think the last couple of years and last go-arounds, they've kind of been pretending that's Carl Anthony Towns' team. But I think now, like, everyone knows it's Ant's team. And you saw him put the team on his back. And, yeah, like, Durant's smiling. They had a good back and forth. It was kind of funny. I did get tickled seeing the highlights and watching the trash talk. And it's all the Anthony Edwards show. And at the end of the game, it's like 33 points. And, like, I didn't see one Kevin Durant highlight. And it's like 31 for Durant. It's like,
yeah.
So, like, as Ant was lighting him up, I guess Durant was giving it back because he scored 33. But – yeah, that was Edwards, like, the crowd chanting MVP moment, and he gets to feel good. And it's a long series, so, you know, don't shoot your shots too fast. You got to save some. You got to go out and win on the road or at least be able to do that three more times at home. So Edwards answered the bell, and I thought that in the nightcap the last game, a similar situation in Oklahoma City, who isn't the best team in the West despite being the one seed. Like, I don't think anyone thinks they're actually winning the West. New Orleans, you know, gave them all they could handle, but it was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander down the stretch, hit a jumper to tie it with a minute and a half left, and then a three-point play to win it at the end of the game. I thought he had his moment as well. So Edwards and Shai Gilgeous, the two young superstars that are budding, both come through for their teams.
Yeah, and I would say kind of a sneaky good performance too. I just saw the statistic this morning that for Oklahoma City, Chet Holmgren had 15 points, 15 boards, and 5 blocks. They said that's the first time that's happened in the playoffs since Shaq.
15-11 and 5.
15-11
yeah.
And 5, yeah. So, but it, yeah, definitely got overshadowed by SGA. And you kind of nailed this one with New Orleans. It'll be interesting. Has there been any word on if Zion is back at all for this series? Because this thing could be really interesting if he was back.
I think it's going to be interesting even if he's not back. I don't think necessarily – I don't think New Orleans has it in them to win 4 of the next 6 without him. I think they really blew their chance last night. They should have stolen that game. Then it would have been an actual, you know, coin flip of a series even without Zion. But no, I haven't seen any updates. I know they're kind of expecting him back, but in terms of timeline, who knows? Who knows with Zion? But yeah, if they had Zion, I think they would just they beat the Thunder. It's kind of the way that feels. But yeah, the hopefully I made you a little money on Friday night. I told you, Sam, to take the Pelicans over the Kings. I told you. It was off to a little bit of a rough start. You're probably like, oh, John doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. But then the size took over and they blew them out and followed it up last night. I thought it was a big spread at 9, too. Like I think New Orleans has got a bunch of good basketball players. I think that's going to be a dogfight of a series.
Took it blindly and trusted it. Felt like Boo Booey back in March. That's what I had to remind myself of.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, good. I'm glad we got that working. It's like, hey, you know, you gave me a winner, I give you a winner, and now we're even.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What do you think of Nuggets-Lakers? It felt to me like Denver looked back in, just for one game, but looked like they were back in championship form.
I don't know. I don't know what I thought, because the Lakers looked just as good as them, if not better than them in stretches. But then, yeah, Denver just flips the switch. They had a big run in the second quarter to go from, I think, 12 down to tied before LeBron hit a parking lot three at the end of the first half. And then they did it again at the end of the third quarter, where the Lakers went from up two to down 10, I think, going into the fourth quarter, or down maybe 11 going into the fourth quarter. And the Nuggets went on a 12-13-0 run and buried them. To me, it just feels like the Lakers are probably kicking themselves. Like, man, it would have been great to get to play the Thunder, because I think they beat the Thunder. But instead, they're going up against a Nuggets team that it seems like they just can't beat. That was the ninth straight win for Denver over L.A.
I saw this stat. It says since they got Aaron Gordon in March 2021, the Nuggets have not lost a single regulation game against a Western Conference opponent when all five starters start and finish the game. They're 37-0.
That's an absurd stat. I hadn't seen that. It's crazy to me that they haven't lost once. I guess Murray was out for a good chunk of that, you know, with an ACL. So I guess, you know, there's not as many games. So only 37 since March 21. Like, okay, like that. I guess that checks out. But no, I mean, like, they lost two to the Suns last year, I guess, with somebody out, maybe. I don't know. Like, the Suns did get them twice last year in the playoffs. I don't remember if anybody was out or not. But newsflash, the Nuggets are really, really good. And Jokic just makes it all look very easy. Now, I do think the Lakers are not going to be overwhelmed by Denver in this series. I do think they have a chance of extending the series. And I think Nuggets in six is what I said before the series. And I do think the Lakers got two wins in them. But you came out in the first half and LeBron was putting on a show. Like that first quarter, I think he had 11-5-5 or something crazy like that, like, or maybe 11-5-3. LeBron was locked in, but then I think kind of ran out of gas a little bit. And then you're like, oh yeah, he's 39 and in altitude and having to do everything.
And the guy we were just talking about last week did not show up for them, D'Lo. They got to get more from him if they're going to try to keep this series close, in my opinion.
Yeah, Russell had looked like the third person in a big three for much of the last, you know, second half of the season. But then, yeah, game one, it was like, oh yeah, never mind. This guy is inconsistent and not really somebody you can rely on, as he went 6 of 20 and 1 of 9 from three. Yeah, like the Lakers in general didn't shoot well from three, especially if you remove LeBron and his three makes out of five attempts. They would be, what, 5 for 24? That ain't going to get it done.
Clippers win without Kawhi?
Yeah, I made a little money on that yesterday just because I don't think that Kawhi being out is a death sentence for them at home. That was the trend of the week. I mean, not to step on my winners and losers, but, like, no team in hockey and no team in the NBA playoffs won on the road this weekend. It was, I believe, if my calculations are correct, 14-0.
Wow.
For the home teams. Not every hockey series went off. I think there's still two game ones tonight, but the other six, all the home teams won. And then all eight in the NBA. And if you go even back to the play-in tournament, like only one team has won on the road, and that was the Lakers against the Pelicans. All the other home teams won all the other play-in games. So home court advantage was back in a big way this weekend. And, yeah, the Clippers came out and really rode that wave in the first half. James Harden, 20 points in the first half, looked really good. And then, you know, the Mavericks kind of settled in and realized, oh, wait, the playoffs have started. Let's lock in. And made a run in the second half. So, like, I do think the Mavericks probably come out of that game feeling okay about themselves.
I'm struck by how Westbrook has really kind of settled in and accepted his role, too. And that's a big deal for that team, I think.
Yeah, Westbrook, you know, him going out, that was also what happened, Sam. We've joked about me putting the curse on the Clippers by talking about Kawhi for MVP. But, like, right around that time, Westbrook went out, too, and their bench kind of fell apart because Westbrook's been a big energy guy for them in terms of that second unit and setting up plays and just playing with energy. And he was pretty good in the first half yesterday. And like you said, Bob has embraced his role and I think is a big asset for them.
Did you see the foul on Tatum? I mean, I think it was just in action. You know what I mean? It just happened. But, man, it did. If I was a Celtics fan, I'd hold my breath for a second there.
Brian Scalabrine on the post-game show, he does TV work for him. He just went out and basically called it dirty. Said Spo put the hit out. Like, he stopped short of saying that, but he's like, you're down 16, a minute and a half. Spolster calls a timeout, and then the next play out of timeout is Caleb Martin running full speed into Tatum and knocking him out of the air. And Tatum took a big spill, but to Tatum's credit, got up and was like, hey, you know, I'm a grown man. It's the playoffs. Let's shake it off. I'm going to go down here and shoot these free throws. I'm not going to let that bother me. I'm not going to lay on the floor and act like I'm hurt. He just got up and went back to it. It did seem a little borderline dirty. I won't go all the way and call it dirty, but it was definitely reckless.
Yeah,
to be flying in for a rebound like that. It was definitely reckless, but at the same time, if you're going to have your starters in up 16 with a minute 30 left, that's kind of what you run the risk of. I understand the playoffs, you want to finish the game, but like, I just always think back to Derrick Rose tearing his ACL in like a blowout of Philadelphia with like a minute left in that game and how that ruined this, you know, the Bulls' franchise and kind of ruined D. Rose's career. So I would maybe err on the side of caution, but
felt just like a Miami Heat classic, like game one, like, hey, this is what the series is going to be like type of thing.
But that makes it sound a little dirty though, right? Like if you're like, yeah, hey, we're going to try to send a message after you just kicked our ass for 46 minutes, we're gonna let you know like, hey, we're not punks at least. Like to me, when you say that, that makes it sound a little dirty. Make them feel you after they just kicked your ass. Let's at least make Tatum get in the ice bath after the game. It's almost like what it seemed like.
Yeah, the only thing I saw was Martin right afterwards spun to him and went to help him up. That's the only reason I was led to believe it wasn't like a hit. You know what I mean? I just think it was aggressive and like you said, maybe a little reckless, but they're still, you know, again, minute and a half in the game, you're down 16. I guess if you're Miami, you're still trying to make something happen there and, you know, get the ball back, whatever.
But we call that covering your tracks, Bob.
Okay.
You knock somebody out of the air, like, oh, I'm sorry, let me pick you up.
It doesn't happen in the NBA, man. You know that. That's the usually they'd walk away if there was intent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think Caleb Martin gets any credit for being a dirty player, but, like, if I'm a Celtics fan, I hate Caleb Martin. Not only did he knock Tatum out of the air, but like he also morphed into like an all-star last year. It's like they combined the power between Caleb and the other twin. They just morphed together.
Cody is the other one.
Yeah, I was going to say the other one's not very good. I couldn't even think of his name. But yeah, like Cody and Caleb morphed together and just became a super player because, yeah, last year against Boston – I mean, in Game 7, Caleb Martin scored 27 points and grabbed 10 rebounds.
Yeah.
In Game 6, 21 and 15. Game 2, 25 points. Like, he averaged 19.3 points in that series just randomly and, you know, sent Boston home. So I'd already hate him, and now he's knocking Tatum out of the air. So emotions are going to be high for sure when it comes to him. You asked about Zion. Have we had any updates on Jimmy Butler? Because I think he's got less time to get healthy, and I'd imagine we're not going to see him in this series because I think this series is going to be four and done. I think the brooms are out, and Boston's going to cut the head off of the Miami Heat snake.
Yeah, haven't heard. I think Jimmy's probably – last thing I'd heard was weeks. And,
yeah.
And
they ain't got weeks.
Now, in game one, you know, the guy who needs to fill some of that void, at least from a bucket-getting standpoint, is Tyler Hero. And he didn't have a D'Angelo Russell-type game, but it was pretty close. 4-13 from the field, 3-9 from three. They need more from him. So I agree with you. I don't see that. It might be a gentleman's sweep at best, but I think it's going to be pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Brooms. I'll take the Brooms. I'll take Boston just getting them out in four.
Cup of coffee on the way out.
Here you go. Here's a $15 cup of Jimmy Butler's coffee. Good luck. Hour one was in the books an hour ago. Hour two is in the books now. Hour three, we'll kick it off with some winners and losers of the weekend. Stick with us. Hour number three, kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. I think I've only heard Benny and the Jets maybe like seven times in my entire life, and four of them have probably been the last 2 weeks. I've doubled my Benny and the Jets intake. Maybe my Elton John intake and all, you know, just in totality in the last 2 weeks. Let's play some winners and losers of the weekend. Sam, you got your intro ready?
Mm-hmm. It's playing right now. Benny and the Jets.
Is Benny a winner and the Jets are losers or what? Jets have always been losers.
I was going to say, yeah. The Jets always seem like losers.
All right, Bob, who won this weekend? Let's start with winners.
All right, number three. This is more kind of from my industry, but there was, and it starts by saying there was a person who died, passed on, but the praise this guy got made it feel like a true winner, and that was a guy by the name of Howie Schwab at ESPN, who was basically the guy who created all the research and details and statistical stuff that ESPN ultimately became adept at. It took a long time for him to get there, but Howie was the guy who did it. He even had a TV show named Stump the Schwab.
I used to love that show.
Yeah, ran for a couple seasons. And if you happen to be on X and follow some of the top media guys in sports on Saturday when it was announced that Howie had passed away, it was amazing. I mean, all sorts of big names, you know, tipping their hat to Howie, talking about how much he impacted ESPN, how much he impacted their careers, et cetera. So, you know, we could all be so lucky to have that kind of legacy when we leave, as, you know, somebody talks about all the contributions you've made to, you know, arguably the premier and, you know, GOAT when it comes to sports television with ESPN. So rest in peace, Howie Schwab. I thought that was pretty cool, all the praise that that guy got. My wife used to work with him and said, nice guy, was everything you saw on TV. He was kind of a stats nerd and a slobby guy, but a really lovable guy and super smart. So rest in peace, Howie Schwab. Number two, dominant pro golfers. We've talked about this a little bit, and you know, from the breaking news desk, Scottie Scheffler just officially won the RBC Heritage. Lost a little of that lead, but it really didn't matter when you're leading by five strokes with four or five holes left. He still won it by three strokes comfortably. So between him, who is now, Sam, you could probably check me on this. Was that five out of six tournaments now that he's won?
Yes. Second place in his other one.
Yeah, second in the other one. Five out of the past six, and the one he didn't win, he finished second. That run, and Nelly Korda, who we were talking about earlier, won her fifth in a row on the LPGA Tour. I mean, we're seeing it's tough. It makes we talked about this last week for the Masters, for example, ratings in the last round of the Masters went down, and some of it's probably attributable to the heater that Scottie's on. I mean, we haven't seen this kind of dominance since vintage Tiger Woods era, and the same for Nelly Korda. You have to go all the way back to, you know, Annika Sorenstam, and then before that, Nancy Lopez back in the late 70s. I mean, there is, like it or not, there's real rarefied air these two golfers are touching right now. It's pretty impressive. And then my top winner, it's Taylor Swift. I mean, I know her album's released on Friday morning, but the buzz really carried into the weekend. And I guess say what you want. I've listened to some of it. There's been some, you know, mixed reviews on Tortured Poets Department. But the fact that she released it in two waves, I mean, it's just, as usual, kind of like marketing and buzz genius on her part. All I could hear, you know, I was in social settings this weekend and people are talking about the references in the songs, you know, whether it's about Charlie Puth or Post Malone doing a collab with her, Florence and the Machine doing a collab with her. It's just, and it was the most streamed album of all time, and that happened in one day. So just, I continue to be amazed by the savvy, and it's not just necessarily her, it's a team that surrounds her. I mean, they continue to just hit it out of the park that way. Just super impressed. I still have to listen to more of the album. My wife is, she's kind of got mixed reviews on it too, but just pretty impressive showing out of the gates for the latest from Taylor.
Okay. Did you dissect the lyrics about the Kim Kardashian?
No.
I
know she had a mention of her, but I haven't heard that one yet.
I listened to it. I wouldn't have ever thought that was about Kim Kardashian, but everyone's telling me it's about her. So I know the title has, you know, K-I-M capitalized in it, so I guess that's what she's going for. But
the Charlie Puth one, I've turned out just to be a fan of his by listening to the interview he did a while back on Howard Stern. Just really, really impressed, like how adept he is as a producer and everything else. And it, I don't know if that's her trying to tee up doing some sort of collaboration with him or what. But, you know, even Charlie was saying on social media, I heard my name came up on this song. I didn't even know, you know, it was like.
So. Yeah, she basically says he should be a bigger artist, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, so, I mean, like his streaming will go up. So, I mean, that is a pretty big deal, getting a shout-out. And
yeah,
it will help with the numbers for sure. And people will probably discover him just because Queen Taylor said so. So her minions will go out and stream him. That'd be pretty cool to be him and just be,
yeah.
Oh, wow, that's me. She's talking about me. Wow, this is great. My winners of the weekend, number three, I went with Christian Moore. I usually try to keep it on a national scale, but man, when you have eight hits in 24 hours and you hit four home runs, including three in a big game, and like that's an all-American type of performance. That's a put it on my draft reel type of performance. I feel like Christian Moore made himself some money and at least like kind of stamped himself in terms of Tennessee legend with that weekend performance against the Kentucky team that we really wanted to beat. It's nice to go to Lexington and win games. I don't care what sport it is. It's nice to do that and kind of put them in their place. He's my third biggest winner of the weekend. Number two, I went with Ryan Garcia, professional boxer, three knockdowns, beats Devin Haney, showed up. People were wondering if he was even taking the match seriously. He's dancing during interviews. He's not paying attention. He shows up overweight and has to pay, I think, $1.5 million fine for being overweight. Didn't care.
Drinks a beer weighing in.
Yeah. Just either is on the verge of like a breakdown or just completely in his element and feeling himself. But three knockdowns, takes down Devin Haney. You know, it's a star-making performance. He's a guy that now will be on the radar in terms of wanting to watch him and wanting to see like his lead up to his next fight and how he handles this success.
People just thought he was like a lunatic and was going crazy before the fight.
That's what I'm saying. They thought he was having a breakdown, and instead he just, you know, beat the brakes off this guy.
Said he was drinking every day of his camp.
Well, he might be on the verge of a breakdown. Like he might be someone we look back on in a year or so and be like, oh, okay. So, yeah, there were some actual stuff going on there. But star-making performance. I know I said that about Christian Moore, but I feel the same way about Ryan Garcia. And number one, my biggest winner of the weekend, I went with the world's best golfers, Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda. We already kind of talked about them. But, Sam, anybody we missed?
I hate to keep it on golf here, but a 15-year-old Miles Russell on the Korn Ferry Tour this weekend. Made the cut, finished top 20, tied for 20th this weekend. Shot 14 under for the week, 68-66 to get into the weekend. He was as high as tied for fourth. Just unbelievable to see a 15-year-old go out there with grown men trying to do this for a living, and he's just out there, you know, going shot for shot with them, and really doesn't seem like the situation or the pressure was phasing him. That's just incredible as a young kid like that. And then
it has to be a little humbling for those other guys.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're like, God, what am I doing out here? I got a 15-year-old on my toes. And then in baseball, I had Cam Boeser of the Red Sox. This was a really cool story. Back in 2017, he tore his UCL, had shoulder surgery. He broke his back when he was hit by a car, quit baseball, retired basically. He became a carpenter, and then he realized that he could still throw the hell out of the ball. Came up, started to play in like independent baseball leagues again, but he got called up yesterday. 31 years old, made his MLB debut for the Red Sox.
All right, Bob, losers of the weekend.
Number three, got to say it. We're kind of closing the book on it, it feels like, but I'm going to say it one more time. The firm of Adu and Iwaka. I mean, how in the world did we get here? Those guys, we had such great chemistry, everything else, but NIL and playing time takes over and feels like maybe the staff was taken for a ride a little bit last week with Jonas, and then thought maybe on Thursday we were going to, you know, open the door to get some news with Tobe, and heard nothing. And again, we've talked about it a little bit today. We talked about it with Ryan Shumpert. If I'm a betting man, I think Tobe's not coming back. So we got to move on from him. So another rest in peace for those two at this point. Number two for me is it's a shared number two, Indiana Pacers and Tyrese Halliburton. This team had so much buzz going into the playoffs, namely because Milwaukee was shorthanded with Giannis Antetokounmpo being out. A lot of people felt the Pacers could win that series. Barkley was giving them Charles was giving them the kiss of death by praising them and hyping them yesterday going into their game last night against Milwaukee. They were a 1.5-point favorite, and they got absolutely torched. And Tyrese, you know, Milwaukee put together a pretty good game plan to deny the ball from him, but it's his job to be the man. If he was a guy who, you know, is supposedly on the U.S. Olympic team and supposedly an MVP candidate down the line, he sure didn't show it in game one. And I think that set the tone for this series to be over quickly, and Milwaukee taking it. I really believe that. So a lot of optimism turns into a lot of pessimism pretty quickly for them. And number one for me would be sticking with our baseball guys, but it is good to win in Lexington. The synchronized dugout cheerleading. Man, and they've been doing that for a couple of seasons. This wasn't new. It reminds me of, and no disrespect to ladies softball, but that's what it reminded me of. It was like, I don't think I've really seen any other collegiate baseball team doing that stuff.
Did you see Tony's quotes after the video? Yes. After the game?
Yes.
People, Kentucky fans, Kentucky riders, had a real hit dog hollers moment because Tony had a quote where he says, "We're not the cheerleading team." No disrespect to them. And people are saying that was a shot at Kentucky. Did you think that was a shot at Kentucky?
I thought it was a shot at Kentucky. In the way he does it. He's pretty glib when he does that stuff. But, yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah, watching the video, watching the context, I thought he was actually just talking about the cheerleading team. Now, it does seem a little too much of a coincidence to be completely random, but he was talking about, you know, his guys in his locker or his dugout, you know, trying to focus during the game and, like, make adjustments and, like, you know, be locked in on trying to pick up tendencies and not necessarily their job's not to be cheerleaders. It's to kind of lock in and get better, and the coaches are trying to not necessarily be cheerleaders but lock in and get better. But Kentucky definitely took that as a shot at them. But after a weekend of all of their antics, I think that would probably be – I'd say I felt a little insecure about it in general.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I just – There were so many things. Like we said, that series was definitely entertaining to watch because we came out on top and it had some great intensity. Had a lot of weirdness, too, if you're watching on TV. That was some of it. The announcers were some of it. It was kind of a tale of two cities. It felt like there were a couple of different vibes prevailing there. But that one really stuck with me. I was sick and tired of them seeing those guys with their water bottles, shaking them up. And, you know, when the walk-up music would come on, they'd cut to the dugout, and those guys were, you know, on the bench dancing. And I don't know. I was over it.
My losers of the weekend, number three, I went with the NHL road teams. 0-6, couldn't get it done. Home ice, I thought, was supposed to kind of be the one thing that didn't really matter. That's what I always thought about the NHL playoffs, was that the road teams could just go in there and win. Well, they didn't this time. Number two, I went with Tesla. Bad weekend for Tesla. Elon seems to be desperate and scrambling. I think 4,000 Cybertrucks had to get recalled because the accelerators faulty. He's having to cut the price on some of the current Teslas on there. They laid off 10% of their global workforce last week. It's a bad weekend for them ahead of their, you know, quarter one earnings call, I guess. Not going to be good for the old stock price, I guess.
That's why they're trying to get in front of it and say, yeah, we're making the changes we need to. We've reduction in workforce, yada, yada. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
But to me, the number one biggest loser of the weekend, kind of already talked about it, but 0-8. 0-8, and really 0-10 if you go back to Friday. NBA road teams, none of them got any wins. None of them stole any games. They all find themselves to be down 1-0. Got to steal a game. Usually at least one team steals something in the first weekend. I think it was the first time since in 11 years. It was either in 11 years or since 2011 that all the home teams won. Bad weekend for the NBA road teams. Sam, anybody we missed?
I had Colorado Rockies hitting coach Hensley Mullins. He is under investigation by the U.S. aviation authorities, basically, FAA, as he was in the cockpit of the plane, went on like Instagram Live, I think, during this and said, I'm going to land the plane. Just not a good look for United Airlines, the Rockies, really anything here. It's obviously not the safest thing in the world to have someone go into the cockpit that isn't the pilot of the plane. And now a guy is joking about flying the plane as well. That seemed like a loser to me. And then I had Aaron Judge as well, off to a very slow start this year. He's batting 179, 27 strikeouts through 21 games.
Got booed.
Yeah, but Juan Soto's good.
Got the old Bronx cheer, as they call it. Yeah. They were letting him have it.
Soto's living large. He was at the Knicks game on the floor, and he's
built for that type of environment.
Yes, he is.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna switch mine. The golfers. So I'll put the golfers at 2 and Ryan Garcia at 1. Plus 425.
Plus 600, I thought.
Okay, plus 425 is what I'm seeing on the CBS article. Maybe it updated.
Yeah, I saw like 600 for his money line.
Yeah, maybe by the time – that was probably written on Friday, by the time the match actually started.
One of my buddies just randomly got like – he won like $1,000 off of Ryan Garcia this weekend.
I wish
that
had been
betting on it to go to decision and Garcia to win.
I wish I'd been paying attention to that.
One more winner. We talked about it at the beginning of the show, but Tim Hill, Fan Run Open champion.
Oh, I had Jake Miller as one of my losers, too.
You know, it has to hurt because we put out the social media video last week where Tim called Jake the biggest loser of the weekend.
And just continues to.
And then owns him. Then owns him head-to-head in the golf tournament. That's tough. We got another announcement to make towards the end of the show. And now that the golf tournament is on, we are on to our new adventure. We'll talk about that in probably the last segment of the show. So stick around, hang out with us. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio.